This week, the Wall Street Journal included an interesting profile of people who, as children, had lost a parent. I wonder if you saw it. The piece was based in large part on a just-released study by Johns Hopkins Children's Center in Baltimore. And I was intrigued because, of course, my father died when he was 50 and I was 20, and so I was curious to see how others had fared. The piece began with Jonathan Herman, a 33-year-old healthcare executive in New York who lost both of his parents to cancer before he was 13. He said, "I'd give up a year of my life for just half a day with my parents. Oh, I've had friends complain they had to drive to see their parents for Thanksgiving," he said. "I tell them I'd do anything to spend a Thanksgiving day with my parents. I'd give up half a year of my life for just a day with my parents." Here is somebody who would make a deal with death to somehow renew the life of those he loved. Yes, death is consuming. It casts a long shadow. It seems, according to the piece, that when polled, 57% of adults who lost parents during childhood shared Mr. Herman's yearnings, saying they too would trade a year of their lives. Their responses, part of the Hopkins study, indicate that bereavement rooted in childhood often leaves emotional scars that last for decades. 73% of those who were surveyed believed that their lives would be much better if their parents hadn't died young. 66% said their loss made them feel as if they weren't a kid anymore. It's as if once death has got its hands on you, well, there's no letting go. Oh, we like to think we can dodge death, and when death does occur, we deny that anything significant has happened to anybody we love. We don't call it a funeral, we call it a celebration of life. We're uncomfortable having bodies present at funerals. Much of the time, the focus isn't on the dead person. We keep the focus on us. And so we don't ponder the journey from this world to the next. Instead, we focus on ourselves, the mourners, traveling from sorrow to stability. We try to forget death. We try to deny death. We try to put it aside. We resolve not to think about it. But that in no way diminishes the power of death. Death is inevitably lurking out there, waiting, just waiting to pounce. The research chronicled in the Wall Street Journal piece suggests that death is more powerful than we care to admit. Its hold is more tenuous. Children whose parents commit suicide, for instance, are 3 times as likely to commit suicide themselves later in lives. The study also found that those who lost parents young are more likely to be hospitalized for depression or to commit violent crimes. In a 2009 memoir, The Kids Are All Right, 4 siblings from Bedford, New York, orphaned in the 80s, described the broad wake of death in harrowing detail. They wrote of growing up as lost souls and turning to drugs and other troubling behaviors to cope. Gary Yonke was 13 when his mother died of cancer. He said, "I gave up on good grades. I dropped out of high school. I didn't do anything except drink, do drugs, and be depressed. I was confused and angry, and adults didn't know how to help me. I had a good relationship with my dad, but he was also grieving." It's as if death, having conquered one soul, seeps into the lives of those who are left, metastasizing, as it were, into the family and friends, infecting everyone left standing like some kind of communicable disease. Oh, there are those for whom the early loss of a parent brings out resilience and the individual becomes more responsible and independent. But even when death is met by responsibility, there is a price to pay. Kids who get through by being stoic and behaving like adults often have their childhood cut short. As they focus on surviving, keeping parents happy, or stepping up to handle the responsibilities of a deceased parent. Donica Sally, a 50-year-old cosmetic sales director in Richmond, Virginia, understands well the ramifications of losing a parent. When she was 13 years old, her 44-year-old father drowned while on vacation in the Bahamas. She said, "That was the onset of my depression. My mom tried to fill the void and hurt by buying me things. And 2 years ago, Ms. Sally's husband died after falling off the roof of their house while cleaning the gutters. He was also 44. Their 17-year-old son has since attended a camp for kids who have lost parents. It's a safe haven for him, she said. There's something about being with people who've been through it. When my father died, I didn't know anyone who'd lost a parent. I was alone. It's as if death is a dark hole that seeks to entomb us in solitary silence. One man put it this way. I haven't heard my father's voice since I was 4 years old. It doesn't exist on tape. It still hurts me not to hear him. Death robs us of the communications and relationships that make us who we are. And it robs not just the children who have lost parents, but parents who have lost children as well, perhaps more so. I remember a friend whose younger sister had died of cancer in middle age, telling me one day he called his mother to check in on her, and she said to him, "Oh, I'm awfully glad you called today. It's the anniversary of your sister's death." Well, it wasn't the anniversary of his younger sister's death, and he thought, this must be the beginning of dementia. Only after his mother died, going through her papers, he found that there had been an older sister who was born, stillborn, and died. And that was the sister whose anniversary of the death his mother was keeping. We are captives of death, held hostage by death. And we need healing and rescue. We need restoration. The relationships that are ended by death, the love that has been brought to a close by death, we yearn that they be restored. Who will deliver me from this body of death? St. Paul asks in his letter to the Romans. Well, in today's gospel, death appears to call the shots. A widow, that is, a woman on the bottom of the socioeconomic ladder, has been visited by death. Her adult son, that is, her only means of survival, her pension, her Social Security, and Medicare, has been taken from her by death. Her son's death means her end as well, for she was undoubtedly dependent on her son for her survival. And so everything in this story moves inexorably towards death. Everything in life moves towards death. All that lives dies. Death is inevitable. Death, when you think about it, is calling the shots in every situation. That is until Jesus shows up. And just by showing up, the march toward death is reversed. Jesus enters and the corpse rises. Death is defeated and a dead young man is given back to his grieving mother alive. There is a future. When before Jesus was there, there was nothing but a dead end. And so the bystanders see and they respond, God has looked favorably on his people. And note that here in the gospel, death is not dealt with through therapy, not by looking for closure. The only remedy there is for death is Jesus Christ. The crowd calls Jesus a great prophet. Yes, Jesus is the one who speaks the truth, but he is more than a great prophet. He is the one who confronts life's inevitabilities and death's terrible tyranny and fundamentally changes the direction of the story. There is fresh, unexpected possibility because of Jesus and only because of Jesus. Death is countered by the one who, in his resurrection, defeated death and rose to new life. This is the victory we celebrate on Easter morning, that day at the cemetery, that place of rest and peace for the dead. The earth quaked. The huge stone placed by soldiers before the entrance was rolled away. And an angel, a messenger of God, was perched impudently on the rock. And that angel preached the first Easter sermon. Don't be afraid. You seek Jesus, who was crucified. He is risen. Come, look at where he once lay in the tomb. And then the angel, having given the gospel to these women, commissions them to become the first preachers. Go and tell the men that he's already gone back to Galilee, and there he will meet you. It's a typically Jesus sort of moment, with people thinking they were coming close to where Jesus was resting, only to be told, go. Jesus is in motion. Jesus is on the road. Jesus is constantly going someplace. And resurrection doesn't just happen on Easter. Resurrection happens whenever Jesus shows up on the scene. Byzantine icons depict Jesus in the jaws of hell, giving a hand to those who died, lifting them up out of the darkness. Jesus doesn't leave us where he finds us, in life or in death. And so we, who are dying, are not defeated by death because we know of death's defeat. There's no explaining this. I can only proclaim it. Jesus has decisively done something about death. Christ is risen. You heard that proclamation here on Easter. And this morning I want to say it with a new twist. Christ has risen for you. Let me put that in the future tense. Christ has not only done something about death, Christ will do something about death. Amen.